So I'm Dr. Mikkola Benson. I'm a sociologist from Goldsmiths, and I'm currently working on a project called Brexpats, which is all about what happens to the British migrants who live in Europe at a time of Brexit. So what's going to happen to them? And so this podcast series, Brexit Brits Abroad, is all about looking at that population and thinking about what the key issues are that affect them as Brexit unfolds. So what we're hoping to do through the series is to provide advice that might be helpful in the anticipation and management of potential consequences. But we're also going to start by doing a little bit of myth busting. In this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Professor Karen O'Reilly, the author of the book, The British on the Costa del Sol, and Rebecca Miller, who's currently a PhD student at the University of Edinburgh, who's working on a British population in the Costa del Sol, particularly an older British population. And what we want to do in this episode is talk about the lives behind the headlines, to talk about how this population might not quite be as they're depicted in the British press. I started out by asking Karen about her research on the British on the Costa del Sol and arriving there in the 1990s.
Okay, so yeah, I did my fieldwork in 93 to 94, 15 months. And when I went there, there was no academic research done on this in this area at all, but there had been two television programs. I can't remember who did it, but one was called Paradise Found and the next one was called Paradise Lost. And the two programs were about how British people were moving to Spain, and it even that denigrated them as these kind of working class people who had this ridiculous dream, and it showed them up, you know, running bars and buying houses that they couldn't really afford, and it all went wrong and they went home. And at the same time, you know, this was a time you might remember when the Brits in Spain were in soap operas, El Dorado, people might remember. They were depicted as criminals in many, many soaps and series and things and in the newspapers. And a lot of journalists who'd followed this up had gone to Fringilola in the Costa del Sol. So that's where I went and did my research. Took my family, took my partner and my children, went there for 15 months, real classic anthropological research. And first thing I found, actually not Paradise Lost. There are a lot of very happy people who were going to stay there forever and have done. And I still know many of them now. Not only that, not all older people has it been portrayed at the time. We were talking about families. We were talking about some older people, some younger people, people working self-employed, running bars, running estate agencies, looking after each other's houses, managing swimming pools, all sorts of marvellous imaginative stuff. So, you know, really mixed population. Another thing I just want to say, at that time, there were also a group of other academics who were, I think, mainly geographers who did research as well, survey-based research, and they focused much more on retirement migrants and middle-class migrants. And I have to say one thing I found being there in the Costa del Sol was that we were a mixed class background, mixed socioeconomic background. And so, you know, many working-class people, many middle-class people, really, really diverse, rich community.
So how would you explain the things that helped them to be there? How was it that they were able to be there at that point in time?
Well, we could go a long way back. I mean, migration to that area really started, well, way back with people like Gerald Brennan and other artistic types moving there. But let's fast forward a little bit. The mass migration, I think, really started as a kind of consequence of mass tourism. So mass tourism took people of all types to these areas, introduced these areas to people. That then sort of late 70s, early 80s coincided with people having more and more time for holidays, people affording to retire early and then thinking, where might I retire? Bit of a continuation of retirement to the seaside. The next seaside was the Spanish Costas that they'd been to as tourists and visited. Also at that time, so then on into the 80s, really, people were able, talking about high house prices in the UK, And people able to sell their houses for higher than they could buy. So what Matthew Hayes would now call geographic arbitrage, selling things for more in the UK and buying cheaper in Spain. So they were funding their move by selling up and buying somewhere cheaper. And then they could afford marvellous houses, marvellous properties with swimming pools sometimes for the price of a flat in the UK. So they were buying a better way of life, buying a new life.
But I suppose the other side of that is it's not just about what people themselves were doing. There are all sorts of structures that help that. So I know that when you were there, that was just after the Maastricht Treaty came into effect, for example. But there are other factors, I believe, particularly in the which would explain why Spain became that paradigmatic case.
Yeah, I mean, I do think mass tourism has been massive for that shift in why it became the paradigmatic case, because that introduced people to going there and then people thinking, well, actually, this is somewhere I could retire to. Then the fact that people retired to, business people then would think, this is actually somewhere I could set up a business and actually provide services to the already settled British community. And then people were then bringing children would settle in school. So this is kind of rolling on effect, if you like. But then obviously, yeah, other things are happening as well, like various different changes. So the relationship between the peseta and the euro, which would have been important at the time, actually, even to go back to the death of Franco in 1975, which after that, Spain became much more European facing. So changes in Spain and Spain's attitude to Europe made it feel more open a place for people to go. And then, of course, the Maastricht Treaty, which interestingly, when I went in 93, the Maastricht Treaty introduced freedom of movement of people in 1992. But it took quite a few years before the various different European countries knew how to implement that or made sense of that. So when I went in 93, I still had to apply for a residence permit for my family, for my children. We still had to have health insurance. We still had to have a certain amount of money in the bank or a certain level of income to prove that we could fund our move. So that was still actually happening in 1993. So that I have a bit of an insight into what might happen post-Brexit, because I can imagine that some of those things will come back in.
So what you're pointing to there is saying that all of those things that we think European citizenship provides and the way that we think that supports British migration to somewhere like Spain, might not, they might be replaced in some other way, because there were things that facilitated migration even before that freedom of movement rule.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think with Brexit, people are focusing very much on those things because they make them feel insecure. Because they don't know what might happen about health insurance and residence permits and various taxes and legal rights, as if this will trigger a mass return migration, and in the process overlooking many of the other reasons why they're there, why people are there. It wasn't simply Europe and free movement that made that space available. It was things we've talked about in the past, about imagining somewhere that you can live that will give you better quality of life, other members of a community there that you know, offer you something that you feel that you can be part of. Very much really moving somewhere that you think can give you the life, as we spoke about in our last podcast, that, you know, even people moving to some of the cities because they imagine a certain way of life that they can't get in Britain.
Yeah. So I'm going to bring Rebecca in now to talk a little bit about the work that she's been doing more recently, because Rebecca's been there, first of all, when the financial crisis happened in Spain, which again was reported very much in terms of its impact on those British populations, particularly because of its relationship to property. So just wanted to ask Rebecca really about being there at the time of the financial crisis and how this was experienced by those British populations.
Well, just to clarify, it was just after the financial crisis, a couple of years after. So in 2015, I went out in April 2015. And one of the things I noticed was a sort of visible what I would call a crisis aesthetic. So that there was a case of boarded up shops, se vende signs, so for sale signs, across the Costa del Sol region, and you know, restaurants with that were half empty and so on and so forth. I know part of that is because I went in April pre-season, but there was sort of this atmosphere of that things weren't, you know, booming or anything like that. So having gone there, I've found also in conversations with the British people that their lifestyle project that Karen, kind of, you were both talking about, had been challenged by the financial crisis. So things that they had just assumed would continue on, you know, their lifestyle, their ability to eat out and so on, that came under threat with the exchange rate dropping to almost, I think it went £1 to €1. So the things that they had and enjoyed as part of their lifestyle project had come under threat. And part of that was unexpected things in their own life, coupled with the financial crisis, led to things like having to sell a house at a moment where you couldn't actually get the profit you'd had hoped for your house. So people were selling it for the value or far below the value because perhaps their husband had gotten cancer. So there was a need to downsize at that moment when the financial crisis was still having an impact, even 7 years later. And similarly, if people had found the need to return home because they couldn't afford their lifestyle, for example, if they were an older person, if they were on their state pension, and they found that the exchange rate wasn't helping them anymore, they might not have been able to afford a place back in the UK. So say they'd left London 30 years ago, they couldn't necessarily afford to sell their house and return to where they considered to be home. And that's something I think that's going to come up again with Brexit, is this sort of reassessing your life in Spain and what your lifestyle is as opposed to what you imagined it would be when you moved out.
I suppose that kind of brings me round to the work that you're doing now, or you've just returned from. You were there when the European Union referendum took place. So you were working with those populations at that point. And it'd be really interesting to hear kind of your interpretation of how they were thinking about that.
Well, so I was there on the day of the referendum and everything was quite quiet. There wasn't that much going on in terms of, I don't know, I didn't know what to expect, whether there'd be some sort of protest or people out talking about it, but really it was quite quiet. The day after, I spoke to a variety of people just on the street, and I think there was a very emotional response, as there was in the UK. Words like ecstatic or delighted were kind of contrasted with devastated, a sense of grief, a sense of loss, a sense of mourning in that very immediate aftermath. And following that, I got together a group of people and did a group interview with them. And there was a sort of sense of just disenfranchisement with their inability to vote if they'd been living there for over 15 years. There was that sort of side of things, that sort of very deep feelings, either positive or negative. There was also a bit like in the UK, I suppose, people had such varied opinions that it could be that friendships were starting to sort of a sense of, you know, we're going to fall out if we carry on this conversation. So in groups that I attended, there was often a sort of self-policing of each other to say, enough, you know, if you carry on this way, I'm going to leave, that kind of thing. I think it was such a highly heated set of events surrounding Brexit, and also the complete and utter uncertainty of what does this mean for our lives here? What does this mean for our grandchildren in the UK? And also maybe Karen's talked about the bad Britain discourse that lifestyle migrants have. So it's this sense of that to make their life in Spain seem even better, perhaps they position Britain as this place that they don't want to go back to because of, you know, crime or whatever it might be. And I think that the Brexit vote actually emphasised that incredibly. So it became something that they would talk about regularly, that Britain wasn't the place that they thought it was, that they don't recognise it. And also they backed that up with the rise in hate crime in the immediate aftermath of Brexit. So things like that were actually encouraging them not only to question their sort of British identity, but also to push forward their idea that Spain was where they belong, you know, this British community in Spain particularly, not necessarily as a member of Spanish society.
Can I just ask, Rebecca, so there were people, you met people who voted to remain and people who voted to leave.
Yeah, that's right.
That might be a surprise to some people who are listening. That
yes, yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. So the people that voted remain would often use justifications, you know, like, well, we feel European, that's our identity now, and that we've lived in Spain for however many years, but also the benefits that being part of the EU, they could recognise the fact that they could be a resident in Spain and receive the reciprocal healthcare agreements and so on and so forth. There were also people who voted to leave. Interestingly, they kind of used this discourse about immigration in the UK as one of their justifications for voting to leave if they did have a vote, which surprised me because, you know, the irony is they are immigrants themselves. But of course, part of the use of the term expatriate is this imagined status that they don't see themselves as synonymous with it as an immigrant.
I think that it's really fascinating. But I suppose kind of beyond the kind of the stated reasons for why they might have voted in particular ways, I suppose going forward, my question would be of whether you've got a sense of what concerns they might have about what this actually means for their lives in Spain.
So they're obviously concerned, as aforementioned, about healthcare, and especially the older people who live there, because over a certain age, I think it's 75, you can't get healthcare insurance, private insurance. So as a result, if the healthcare agreement wasn't reciprocal anymore, it would be a case that they, what are they going to do if they can't afford the private, well, either can't afford or are not eligible for the private healthcare. There's also concerns about the pensions. So as I mentioned, with the exchange rate, it's already happening that there's a sort of a real impact already as to how Brexit is affecting their lives, but also issues of, will the pension be index linked? So will it rise with inflation as it is now? But also there's real concerns about citizenship, and part of that is identity, I would suggest. But you can either be a British citizen or you can be a Spanish citizen. There is no dual nationality as it stands at the moment. And that's something that some of the campaigners towards protecting the rights of British people in Spain are pushing for, is for those who have moved there and have lived there and speak Spanish and are very much part of the sort of Spanish culture and have no intention of returning to the UK, they don't have the option of being both. And I think people are potentially very hesitant to give up their British nationality because that's something that's very closely linked with their identity, their sense of self as a British person, first and foremost, perhaps. There's also concerns, as mentioned, about people's rights in Spain and also rights in the UK if they were to return. So if you're a resident in Spain but needed to return to the UK, where would that leave you if you've been away from the UK for 10, 15, 30 years? Potentially another concern is the distinct lack of answers, which I think people in the UK are probably also very concerned about. But without answers, there's no ability to have any kind of forward planning. And I suppose a further thing is the difficulties of actually returning to the UK. So as I mentioned, if you can't afford to go back to the place that you maybe still consider home in your mind, even though you might have lived in Spain for 15 years, you still consider, I don't know, Hull to be home, then, and you can't afford to return there or you have no family left there, what are you going to do? Are you going to be put into some sort of care home potentially if you're, you know, an older person? And that would couple the loss of independence, that would be coupled with the loss of independence for your life. So a lot of people, especially older people, often talk about how wonderful it is to be independent, going around, being able to sort of do what you like, go shopping when you like, and have this great community of friends who also feel the same way, British people mainly. Then that's a big loss if you do return to the UK because of Brexit.
I mean, we know a lot about this from Caroline Oliver's work on Northern Europeans who live in Spain, of course. But I think that what you've pointed to really nicely is the way in which Brexit marks a moment where those kind of uncertainties about people's futures come into play. And I'm right in saying that you work specifically with older populations. I think we should clarify that, who are a particular population, but also quite diverse in their political views. But what I was really interested in, and I think that this would be a really interesting point to close on, was the kind of disenfranchisement. And you've spoken about the disenfranchisement brought about by the fact that as British citizens, they will no longer be European citizens. But also, I just wanted to touch very briefly, and I think you did mention that, you know, of course, some of these people were able to vote in the referendum, but there will have been portions of that population that were unable to vote in the European referendum precisely because they've lived outside of Britain for 15 years. And I wondered if that had come about at all in the work that you'd done.
Yeah, most definitely. So there was often a sort of sense of unhappiness, to say the least, at the fact that if you'd lived there for more than 15 years, you couldn't have a vote. And that's something that's gone to the Supreme Court. It's been challenged by, I think it's some expatriates living in Italy. So it was definitely something that people felt challenged their sense of British identity again. So they've spent their life paying into the tax system and so on. They have chosen to move abroad, but perhaps it's because they saw the benefits of living as an EU citizen. You could live elsewhere. That was part of being European. A poignant thing that somebody said to me was that we are, they called themselves expatriates, that's why I'm using that term particularly, but we are expats, but we are not ex-Brits, was what they said to me, which I think says a lot in itself about that sense of identity and, you know, their geographical imagination. In their mind, they still see themselves very much as almost being in Britain in terms of listening to the news, the British news, and watching BBC news programmes. Or in their mind, they might even also say that here we do this, but by here they mean the UK.
So kind of to wrap up, what we've heard about is the kind of factors that maybe brought people to the Costa del Sol in the first place, their kind of personal choices that they made, but also some of the changes. So Karen talked about how even with kind of the demise of Franco, I think would be really important, Spain became part of Europe. It went through quite a radical economic transformation, and that brought with it the possibility that Spain could develop mass tourism, but also encourage this form of residential tourism, which is a way that we have been known to refer to the development of the Spanish coastline to accommodate people who might be there for a little bit longer than just tourists. But we've also heard from Rebecca about some of the more recent changes, the financial crisis, Brexit, and what's going on with those older British people living on the Costa del Sol at this point in time, and how it's actually a much more complex image that we might receive in that poster child image of the British in Spain. So thank you very much to both Karen and Rebecca for coming to talk to me today. To find out more about the issues we've been discussing today, follow our Twitter feed at BrexpatsEU and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And I'll see you in the next episode.